Thank you. I was told by someone, I won't say whom, to introduce these folks as my favorite sources, which I cannot do because I have no favorite sources. It's like introducing your favorite children. But I will say that I really enjoy talking with all of these people because of their breadth of knowledge on transit and their passion for it and their deep realization of how important it is to our region. And we'll start off with Dorval Carter, who is president of the Chicago Transit Authority, which is the nation's second largest transit agency. 1.5 million rides on any given weekday. He's 10,000 employees. And he's a guy with some big projects coming up. There's been more than $8 billion in projects since 2011, and we're about to start with the Red-Purple Line modernization next year. So a lot going on the CTA. Next, we have Jim Derwinski, my countryman, and the CEO and Executive Director for Metra, who started as executive director last year but has been with Metra a long time, started off as an electrician in 97 in Metra and rose through the ranks, and is a person who, being with the mechanical department, really understands the needs that Metra has. Rocky Donahue, interim executive director for PACE. He's had 35 years with PACE, and some of those have been with media and public relations, which has been very useful because he's able to explain even to an English major some of the budget issues that they have at PACE and some of the things they're working on. And then as our we also have here Leanne Redden, executive director of the RTA. She's been with the RTA since 2006, executive director for 4 years, and she manages the agency that oversees the funds of all these agencies. So they have a lot to talk about, so let's give them a round of applause and get started.
I can manage it. Everyone's very excited to get going here this morning. So, as Mary said, I'm joined by my colleagues and I kind of like to say friends for the heads of CTA, Metra, and PACE. And I think we're all really excited to be here. I know it's a busy time of the year for everyone, so I'm glad, you know, City Club could squeeze us in and then hear from us a little bit today. So admittedly, we're the transit guys. So guess what? We're here to talk about public transit. So that's no surprise to anyone in this room. But I think I can speak for everybody up here that's saying that transit does not operate in a vacuum. It's really a driving factor of the vibrancy and the economic vitality of this region as a whole. And so any conversation about transit is never just about the buses and the trains. It is a much broader conversation. So we're here to talk about a plan for the transportation future that envisions this region as a national leader in both mobility and access to opportunity. A future where we are embracing emerging mobility technologies, public-private partnerships, and innovation. But at the same time, a future that does not prioritize any one advancement or mode of travel, but a policy of safely and quickly getting as many people in and around this region as possible. I'd like to discuss a vision worthy of a region that has historically claimed itself as the nation's transportation capital. So before I dive deeper with these three experts, I'm going to make two quick points, and then we're going to show you the video that we just sort of prematurely launched up there. So, but without any further ado, point number one. This is really just to set some context, I think, for the video and the conversation that we're going to have. This region drives the state's economy, and transit drives this region. This region represents 80% of this state's GDP. So just let that sink in. The state's economy is 80% of it is represented up here. We can all agree that this city and region and the state have a host of challenges. But it's obvious that the economic growth of this region is the steady heartbeat of the state's economy. So how does transit fit in? Two-thirds of the people that are in the loop right now got there on either a bus or a train. The economic engine of the state's economy is fueled through accessibility and anchored by transit. A recent Metropolitan Planning Council report found that 85% of all commercial development or commercial construction in 2017 occurred within half a mile of either a CTA or a Metra station. So point number two. Despite the obvious economic advantages that transit is bringing to this state, the current funding model treats the transit system as a government liability. as opposed to one of the state's most valuable assets. For decades, we have not been putting the proper level of investment into this valuable asset. And for the past 5 years, the so-called transportation capital of America has relied almost entirely on the limited federal dollars that they send to us for capital investment. And we should be investing triple what we have today. Our goal should not be to invest in just and not just enough to keep the lights on, but we should be doubling down on that investment to really double down on our inherent economic advantage. Now I want to share the video that is called Invest in Transit, and it speaks to that need for investing in our region's transit infrastructure.
Every day, 2 million people count on us to get to school, to work, to where they need to go, and back home again.
Transit's the way to go.
You don't have to sit in traffic.
Fast, convenient.
Without the bus, I'd be stuck.
Our region is built on mass transit. The CTA, Metra, and Pace were created more than 70 years ago to replace private rail, streetcar, and bus companies that went bankrupt. Private investors were replaced by government investors. And despite inheriting aging equipment, inaccessible stations, worn track, and old trains, they helped the region grow into a premier hub for freight, banking, and commerce. Today, our regional transit system is the second largest in the nation. We serve Chicago and 277 municipalities in 6 northeastern Illinois counties.
Yeah, I take the train every day to work.
It's just relaxing. It just makes things easier, really.
Public transit benefits all of us. It enhances lives by letting riders talk, text, read, work, or just zone out while someone else does the driving. It attracts businesses, jobs, and increases property values. Did you know that in Chicago, properties within 2 blocks of transit are more than twice as valuable as those further away? And public transit saves money, even if you don't ride. An average of $400 a year for rush hour drivers because it reduces the number of cars on the road. But now, it's all at risk. Our systems are large and very old. 31% of our buses and trains are beyond their useful life. Safe to ride, but costly to maintain. And aging faster than we can replace them.
Doesn't the government pay for all that?
In theory, however, the state hasn't passed an infrastructure bill in a decade. For years, funding has been wholly insufficient to operate and maintain your transit system. There's too little local support. State dollars are rapidly diminishing. And federal funding hasn't grown significantly for years. It's time to act. It's time to invest in transit. Investing in transit means making your rides even better. With projects like an overhaul of hundreds of CTA rail cars and building a new maintenance shop to replace the one that's been in use since the 1890s. Projects like the replacement and repair of 61 Metra bridges, some made of timber that are still in use. Projects like the purchase of 412 new Pace buses to replace aging ones that have reached the end of their useful life.
Now that's getting our money's worth.
We have big goals. To deliver value on our investment, to build on the strength of our network, and to stay competitive. That's why transit needs new sources of funding.
I thought fares pay for transit.
They just raised the fare, so I don't know where it's going.
Actually, fares only cover about half of each ride. The system was designed as a public-private partnership. The plan was, because it benefits everyone, riders and taxpayers would share the cost. So each ride is funded by sales tax, the state, and a little from local governments. Problem is, those sources are not very reliable. Recent state funding cuts are one of the reasons why we've seen fare increases and service cutbacks. We need funding we can count on to keep providing the rides you depend on. With funding, we can design and build projects efficiently. Without it, projects are stalled, prices rise, and we may never leave the station. With funding, we can deliver fast and reliable service. Without it, we risk breakdowns, slowdowns, and service disruptions.
Doors closing.
And with funding, transit stays competitive, something that's getting a lot more difficult as riders today have more and more choices. Because we need transit. It's the backbone of the Chicago region's transportation network. It's the most affordable, equitable, and dependable way to ride. It's why investing in transit must be a priority.
Well, it's a priority for me. I have to get to work.
For my life, it's a priority. Transit is a priority, yeah.
I'd pay more if I didn't have to be packed in like this.
So would I.
With new funding, we can continue to do what we do best. Save you time and money, getting you where you need to go. It means planning your ride will be even easier with real-time travel information, mobile payment apps, and enhanced trip planning information. We can keep ridership growing.
That's awesome.
That works for me.
So how much are we talking?
We need a stable, dependable, dedicated annual capital investment program of $2 to $3 billion per year over the next 10 years to protect and preserve the transit system you depend on.
And how much are we investing now?
Not even half.
Wow.
A new capital investment plan for the Chicago region is overdue.
I don't see how we can afford not to do it.
It's time. Time to act. Time to invest in transit. Because transit makes life better for all of us.
All right. So we're going to jump right into the discussion. And then we'll leave some time certainly at the end to entertain some questions from you guys as well. So Dorval, I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
You spoke here at City Club. Jay mentioned that just a few minutes ago. And you really discussed a vision for CTA's future. For those of you who may not have been here, can you give us a couple of highlights of some of those projects, some of those ideas that you discussed? And I think more importantly, the second part to that is, what's it going to take to create that vision and make that vision a reality?
Sure. And for those of you who weren't able to see my presentation, I would reiterate Jay's comments that you should go to the website and review it. I think it's a interesting discussion on what, at least from one person's perspective, I think the opportunities are for a city like Chicago. I think the broad point that I was making in my presentation is that we are moving more and more away from being transit providers to being mobility managers. And as we see the other mobility options that are starting to come into our city and will continue to come into our city, it's become more and more important that we have a more holistic view of how we approach mobility throughout the entire city. One of the things that we know is, regardless of all the mobility options that are available to us, there is no option that will have the capacity to move as many people at one point in time than public transportation, which is why we talk about public transportation as the, quote, backbone of any transportation network. When you stop and think about the billions and billions of dollars that we've invested in our public transportation infrastructure, which is one of the foundations for why the city of Chicago is viewed as competitive as it is on an economic basis, why would you ever walk away from that? What we should be doing, what we are talking about doing, is leveraging it. Leveraging it in a way that allows that network to form the foundation for whatever mobility options ultimately develop and grow out of the city as a whole. And so one of the ways that you approach that, of course, is through investments. We are investing in our current infrastructure with projects like the Red Purple Modernization Project. We're also investing in the future of CTA with projects like the Red Line Extension, which is going to go south of the current Red Line to 130th Street. Those investments are critical to both maintaining what we have and also growing to meet the needs of the community as we move forward. And in order to do that, you have to have a capital funding source to support it. And that, you know, when we talk about my future vision of what we want to do, none of that is possible without adequate capital resources, and I would add operating resources to support it. And that's foundationally what we're talking about here today.
Thank you. So, Jim. Well, actually, Dorval, did you want to, you touched on Red Purple Modern. Is there any other projects that you kind of think were sort of some of the visionary highlights, a little, you know, doing things differently?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that I talked about is leveraging technology. There's no reason in this day and age that technology doesn't make it easier for us to use our mobility options in a more seamless way. There are things that we're working on, including expanding our venture app to allow for seamless integration of Lyft and Uber and Divvy and other mobility options, so you have one-stop shopping for all your mobility choices. We're talking about, in my mind, time in the future when the ability to transfer between, say, an automated vehicle and CTA will become seamless because the vehicles will be able to talk to each other and align in such a way that when you get out of that car, there will be a train or bus waiting for you to take you for the rest of your destination. I think that you know, in a future vision of this city, there are opportunities for us to integrate in a much more seamless way the various mobility options that exist and allow the people who are trying to make these choices make it easier for them to both utilize the various options and ultimately make the most cost-effective and efficient choice for them. The one thing that I've made the point about on more than one occasion is that CTA, Metro, and Pace are never going to provide the same type of service you get from an Uber or a Lyft. We are not going to be in the business of picking you up at your home and dropping you off at a specific location. But what we can do is get you from one point to another in a cost-effective manner more efficiently than any other option that you will have. And that, to me, is the foundation for why economically we need to make the type of investments that we're talking about.
Thank you. Jim, so you presented your budget, the Metro budget, to the RTA board just last week. And in that, you discussed some real projects, not just the sort of the list that's on the five-year capital program, some of those as well, and some of those are very much needed. But talk a little bit about how you think that, you know, stable, reliable, predictable capital funding could really move the needle and help you sort of deliver projects that really could transform this region from Metro's perspective.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, like you said, I presented last week a little bit of a vision, a little bit more than just getting back to the state of good repair. I've often said if we spend the next 10 years getting back to state of good repair, we've taken ourselves back to 1990. So really moving forward is what I've been looking at. And we want to do that, obviously, in such a mannerism that we prioritize things. And first is going to be safety and security. I mean, that kind of is a given, but that would be our highest priority. Because once again, with sustainable funding, you can start actually projecting out some great projects. But how big is that going to be? And that'll be the question, not just for us, but for the legislator and for other funding partners. And then anything that reduces operating costs. We're clearly in the eyes of the public to make sure that we're spending tax dollars wisely. So anything we could do to reduce operating costs, control fares, that's another priority. And then anything we can do to increase ridership, which of course helps the other side of that equation. Our locomotives are old. They run on DC technology. In the freight world, they don't even run those kind of locomotives north of Arkansas anymore because it snows. We have to deal with snow. And we've seen when we invest in a system like on our electric district where we actually shifted over to AC propulsion technology, we haven't had a failure in 10 years. I mean, it's incredible to see that kind of reliability come out of the system. So one of the highest priorities would be to convert as many locomotives as we can and purchase as many locomotives as we can to more modern technology, to Dorval's point. Invest in technology. It'll help reduce costs and it'll actually increase reliability. Our oldest coaches right now are 1953. They're serviceable. They were actually designed in 39. We are going out for an RFP, and we're going to do it a little bit differently early first quarter next year. And we're looking at coaches based on a performance type measurement. Right now, those old coaches, it can take up to 9 days just to change an air conditioner. And we had some struggles this summer with air conditioning. And I'm talking about physically removing the air conditioner from the vehicle, putting it back in the vehicle. We've actually went to other properties in the country and took a look at where they can change an air conditioner in 1 hour with the car in line. I mean, once again, it's just an investment into the smart way to do things. A little bit technology, a little bit design. A little bit more modern than 1939. It's kind of like a rhyme. We have Half of our bridges were installed before the automobile was invented. I mean, that's, I talked to the road builders once, and that kind of rang home with them. But the fact of the matter is, they're old. We inspect them on a normal basis. When Metro was formed 35 years ago, it was basically three railroads, two bankrupt and one heading toward bankruptcy. And so we inherited a lot of that old aging infrastructure, just like the CTA did when they were formed. And a lot of that still needs to be taken care of. Service enhancements. With our customers, the one thing I can tell you that we're good at is moving a lot of people a long distance. And when we're really good at it, we do it really fast. Naperville trains right now come in about 32 minutes. They'll put anywhere from 1,300 to 1,700 people on one of those trains. So by expanding our service current infrastructure to make it so we can run more express trains, that's something that I think we really need to invest in. Now, what does that mean? That's going to mean we need more of those cars. It's going to need more locomotives. We're going to need more track. We're going to actually have to do land acquisition. Almost every one of our outer point yards right now is stuffed to capacity. So when you need to add stuff, you need to add places to put that stuff. And so that would be one of the bigger projects, more expensive projects. If we had sustainable funding, we could start whittling that list down. We run 11 lines. Each line's got unique, different opportunities for that type of expansion. And that'll be for, you know, other people to determine our board. It'll be a big task if money's really came in. Customer service enhancements. For us, I just took a ride out on Metro Electric yesterday. We have a lot of stations out there that don't have the basic necessities. A place for you to get out of the elements when it's snowing like it was yesterday. Yeah, we've got some three-sided small bus shelters, and nothing against the bus shelters, but we can put a heating shelter on. We can actually, because once in a while we have service disruptions because we run 1977 equipment out there. And we have some stations right now that just really don't take care of the passengers. So an enhancement to the stations, lighting, cameras, security, better reconfiguration of parking so that like the Ubers and Lyfts can actually get right up there. The Pace vans can get right up there to the station and we can kind of start working together. So it would be some station enhancements. A2 is where we have four Union Pacific lines cross directly through three Milwaukee West lines, just west of the city here, Union Station, and it's our biggest choke point. If that thing goes down, it was built in 32, if that thing goes down, we can collapse seven lines all at once. There's a lot of money that continually gets put into that to maintain that upgraded. The ideal situation would be to grade separate it. One set of lines would literally fly over the other set of lines. It's an enormous amount of money. However, it is an economic development that actually would stimulate the economy in the area, a lot of jobs. It would actually help make those lines more reliable. And in the west side of the city right now, there's a lot of growth. There's a lot of growth going on. So this is a good time to be in that conversation. 75th Street SIP, that's a big untanglement of the nation's largest freight mess down in the corridor down there called Belt Junction. Right now, the first phase of that project was brought forward at $460 million after we got a grant from the federal government. That's halfway to just the beginning of that. The other half we would like to work on and get that done. Basically, our Southwest service trains will go underneath the freight trains. They would fly over us, and it would untangle where seven lines come together. And then Rock Island District electrification was on the list. Why? Because it's the right thing to do for the environment. On our electric district, we are so reliable. Last year, we ran about 40,000 trains. We had 8 mechanical failures. So once again, when you invest in the system, that's where you get. And finally, last on the list is O'Hare. And the reason I bring up O'Hare is because there was discussion about a way to get from O'Hare down to City Central here. I know there's a tunnel being built someday. But the fact of the matter is we actually have tracks on the south side and the east side of O'Hare. We are already there. We've been there for 100 years before the airport was there. And so it's a good conversation to have. I think we could provide some really robust service if given that opportunity. And once again, that's going to be more infrastructure. That's going to be dedicated lane for that high-speed train to get right out there and then bring people back and forth. So good conversation. All of that together, I'm looking for about $5 billion.
That's the price tag, but that's what it takes. So, thanks, Jim. I'm glad you mentioned A2 as a Metro regular rider who goes through A2 every day. If he leaves it off the list, I always poke him and like, talk about A2. It's really important for me. Anyhow, Rocky. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for
glad
joining
to be
us.
Here.
And so, as we alluded to earlier, we face a new reality in transit in both, you know, that can be both exciting and challenging, right? We've sort of touched on some of that. The mobility landscape is changing. We're offering more, you know, mobility, there are more mobility choices for people on how they move around, when they move around. There's also, like, I think there's a potential for partnerships with the Ubers and Lyfts of the world. We do sort of have a symbiotic relationship with them, potentially. You know, the world that can, it's a world that can make transit more efficient and more appealing to customers and riders and people moving around the region. But it can also present some really real challenges for us, right? Especially in our more congested areas across the region. So what do you see PACE's role in sort of that dynamic that we live in now going forward? What do you see PACE's role in how we improve, how you can improve mobility and access in our region?
Sure. Thanks, Leanne. Good morning. Before I get to the question, there's two PACE board members I'd like to recognize here today, the Mayor Crystal Lake, Aaron Shepley, and the former mayor of Wilmette, Chris Canning. If all of you could say hello to them, I'd appreciate that. So I do have that title interim, so you'll understand why I said hello to them. but very, very good question about mobility and the Ubers and the Lyfts and what that is. And many of you might be thinking, is Dorval kind of touched that the rideshare companies is going to be maybe, you know, the demise of public transit. That's how people may be thinking. Look at how convenient this is. We go from place to place. It's real simple. And that's the farthest from the truth. Just as you've said, Leanne, I view the rideshare as an opportunity for partnerships. And you hit the word correctly, a symbiotic relationship. Two very different entities that get together, and that relationship is going to benefit both the rideshare companies, and it's going to benefit us here in transit and PACE. And I can tell you in our service area where ride-sharing partnership makes a lot of sense is in the suburbs. We have some challenges, what we call first and last mile. We get real close to where you want to go, but we can't get you exactly where you need to be. And that rideshare opportunity will be able to handle that first and last mile. The other challenge in the suburbs that the rideshare really comes and makes a lot of sense is in our more rural areas of our service area, be it Kane County, Lake County, McHenry County, where traditional transit, a 30, 40-foot bus, doesn't make a lot of sense. So rideshare picks up there. Also, in our service area, unlike CTA, we offer really no service in the evening or on the weekends. So that's a way to fill those gaps on evening service and weekend service. So those partnerships are very important, and partnerships have been very important to the success of PACE throughout all our years. We've partnered with IDOT on Bus on Shoulders in 2011 on I-55. We expanded that last year to the Edens Expressway. We partnered with the tollway for a flex lane on I-90 from Elgin to Rosemont. We're working with the tollway now on a flex lane on 294 as they're getting ready to reconstruct the Central Tri-State. And the success of those partnerships are, as they say, the proof's in the pudding. On I-55, Bus on Shoulders, prior to riding on the shoulder, we carried 400 people a day. Today, we're carrying nearly 3,000 people a day in that corridor, a 600% increase. The I-90 service has grown by 200% over last year, and it continues to grow by leaps and bounds. And so what all of this shows to me is, you know, we're just not a suburban bus agency. We're a regional transit leader, and that leadership is going to continue this summer when we introduce our Pulse Milwaukee line. This is going to be state-of-the-art arterial rapid transit, technology-driven. It's going to have traffic signal priority to make sure the buses continue to run on time, real-time information for the passengers at the stations, and Wi-Fi on all the vehicles. And that leadership isn't just in fixed route service. We're the nation's second largest provider for ADA paratransit. 18,000 people with disabilities every day get on a PACE bus to have access to the community. And that's access that a lot of us in this room take for granted. It's access to employment, it's access to medical facilities, it's access to schools, it's access to just being part of the community. And when we were talking a little bit about ADA at breakfast, Jay and Chairman Dillard both reminded me that, you know, the ADA Act was signed by President George H.W. Bush. So maybe there was a little interesting symmetry between us being here today and the president's passing recently. We also offer one of the largest van pull programs in the nation. 700 vans on the road every day taking people to and from work. So kind of what I've learned over my years in transit is that we cannot operate a transit system that was built for yesterday but is expected to meet the needs of tomorrow. And I think all of us up here know that, and all of us up here are working really hard, and we're transforming this system, and we're investing a lot of money into projects and programs to build the future system. But let's face it, the world's changing. Our customers' needs are changing. The economy's changing. Technology's changing. And PACE is up to changing, and we're going to change as well. But in order to do that, we need sustainable capital funding from Washington and Springfield. And that's on all of us in this room. And all of us need to go back to our elected officials and remind them of the need to invest in our public transit system.
Thank you. I think you've heard a bit of a theme here. It's sort of you have to essentially spend money to make money, because the transit system really is an underpinning of our region and our state's economy. And if we don't take advantage of that economic advantage that we have, being the transit system, we're going to lose it. And you just can't turn the, you know, it's not going to, if we don't actually start having that real conversation about what it takes to invest in that future, we have to have a very different conversation over the next 5 to 10 years. And that's a conversation that none of us in this room, none of us up here, nor any of us in this room ever want to have. And that could be about what are we ending to have to shut down, or what are we having to cut back on service. That's not the place we want to go. We want to actually double down on this. I think you've heard from these guys here, you know, some of their ideas. You know, sometimes we get mired in sort of the day-to-day of what, you know, what's happening right in front of us, but we do have a plan. We do have a vision for the future. I think these guys are really willing to sit up here and lead their respective organizations and collectively lead all of us together, you know, into a future that where technology and our transit network is really that key component of really keeping our Chicago metro area running and humming along as it really has been over the last 5 years. So, I think that's, what I would like to do is ask each of you if you had kind of a closing comment, if you wanted to make that. Otherwise, we can go to the audience. And I think Chairman Dillard was going to actually ask some questions. Did either of you want to make a closing comment, or do we want to just go straight to questions?
No, I think you summarized very well sort of where we are as a region. I think the only other comment that I would make is that, you know, the history of public transit in this region has been fraught with division between CTA, Metra, PACE, and RTA. The one thing that I hope all of you take away from our presence up here today is that we're unified around this issue, and that we believe as a region we are stronger working together than working apart. And we're bringing one common message down to Springfield and everywhere else that we can that shows that as a group, we believe that this is a direction we need to go in, and that we need everyone's support to make it happen.
Thank you. Jim, did you?
I actually just want to underscore what Rocky said, and that's it's time for us to act, not just listen to what we said today. We have a new Congress coming in the state of Illinois. We have a new governor coming in the state of Illinois. And it's time to educate them about the region and about the investment into the region, and not do it just anecdotally, not do it just, oh, yeah, I heard this and I support it. It's about literally getting boots on the ground, picking up the phones, getting on those emails, the social media side. Trust me, I know this summer when we had some trains go down, the social media side let us know what we were doing. And by the way, that same social media side went right to the legislators. And it talked to them. And so, once again, we all thank you for being here today. We know you're a key component, but there's a bigger key component, and there's another 7.5 million around here that really need to start talking to the legislator.
Thank you. Okay.
No, I just would follow up on their comments. You know, transit improves people's lives. I don't know the statistic, if it still holds, but the last I had heard, for every dollar we invest in public transit, we get $6 back to the community. And you know, we move all of you. We move your employees. We help the trucks move through the highway. We help commerce move. So it's really important that if you believe in this and when you have an opportunity to talk to your leaders, that you let them know the importance in investing in our public transit system.
Yeah, and as Rocky said, even if you never get on a bus or train, because we all run into people like, I don't ride the train, I don't, you know, they'll be in the car in front of you. If those 2 million people aren't in public transportation, they're in that car in front of you, slowing you down even further, slowing down your delivery of goods. You know, so think about it from that perspective as well. So with that, I'll turn it to Chairman Dillard.
Thank you very much. I'm Kirk Dillard, and I have the honor and privilege, and it is a privilege, to work with this panel up here on a daily basis and the nearly 15,000 men and women who do such an excellent job every day of moving over 2 million of our fellow citizens. That's 1/6 of the population of Illinois from Carbondale to Chicago ride on these three gentlemen's systems daily. So thank you guys very, very, very much, and Leanne. The first question comes from a great champion and partner in the mass transit community with us, and that's Mary Sue Barrett from the Metropolitan Plan Council. And Mary Sue, before I begin, it was mentioned that 85% of all commercial construction, incredible number, 85% of all new commercial construction in the 7-county metropolitan area came within 1 mile of mass transit in the last decade, and over 50% of every job created is within a half a mile of mass transit in the last decade. So it screams for investing in transit. Mary Sue's question to the panel is, you noted that the state hasn't passed a capital spending bill in a decade. How, Dorval, has the CTA been able to make continued investments in large projects that we read about to modernize without any money in the last 10 years from the state?
Well, it hasn't been easy. we've had to get innovative. There are things that we've had to do, and I noted that we have a couple of aldermen here in the audience with us. Well, I can tell you that one of the things that we did is we used TIF financing. And the city council, by an almost unanimous vote, approved a unique transit TIF for the city of Chicago that runs along the Red Line corridor that allowed me to basically go and pursue a little bit over $1 billion in federal funding to help build the Red Purple Modernization Project. We have pursued special financing through the TIFIA program of the federal government and use TIFIA loans, which are at a low interest rate and very competitive, to allow us to stretch our dollars further and to use what dollars that we have in a more innovative and unique way. And we've had to issue debt. Basically, when the state doesn't issue debt, we're forced to basically use our own debt capacity to accomplish that. And that's not because I'd love to issue debt and want to carry the cost of debt over an extended period of time, but it's because if I have no other option and I have critical capital needs, and you heard Rocky and Jim talk about what their capital needs are. Well, I can tell you, CTA's capital needs right now are $6 billion. $6 billion. And if I talk about my unmet capital needs to get to a state of good repair, the number's $13 billion. So those are numbers that are pretty much, daunting in and of themselves. And I recognize that we have to put in our own skin in the game to make that happen. I recognize that you just don't go out and ask for a capital program for $13 billion just for us. I understand there may be some other transportation modes that want some money as well. But, I think that we have to put together a long-term, sustainable strategy that's going to provide a reliable and dedicated funding stream that we can rely on, that we can leverage to fund the needs that we have over an extended period of time. What we can't keep doing is stopping and starting. And every time we stop, that number on the other side just balloons. If we're going to get serious about this, if we're going to get serious about fixing this problem in the long term, we need to put in place the type of a funding approach that's going to allow us to address this and chip away at this over time so we get it back down to an acceptable level and we're allowed to basically move and grow our infrastructure needs as we move forward.
Thank you. Speaking of other entities that need money, this question comes from Peter Scozzi from the Burlington Northern Santa Fe, and it probably is directed at Jim Derwinski. Even if the state passes a capital bill next session, what else needs to be done? We keep deferring maintenance, and fares only cover so much or about half of the operating cost. Even with the capital bill, what else are you going to have to do?
Like, that's a great question, Peter. And a lot of the things that Metra's done, we're not in right now debt with that. We've been very creative in a different way. We've used technology and different programs in place to continue to take our old assets and make them reliable into the future. And some would say that's kind of crazy, but when we don't have the same funding streams that the city has, and so therefore we didn't have the debt financing structure behind it to go out for the debt. So we did different things. We've rehabbed our own cars in-house to a tune of about 40% of what it costs to rehab them external, and then also to a tune of 25% what it costs for replacement. On the front side of the things, locomotives and cars are the first things that, of course, the passengers see, and that's where our money's really been focused in catching up and actually advancing our rehab programs. So I guess the answer is we've been really doing that very well. It's now maybe time to start replacing. A lot of our equipment is old. Just because it's old doesn't mean it's safe. It doesn't mean it's not reliable. Like I was talking about earlier, it's trying to control the operating cost. And by investing in the technology, we'll be able to hold the operating costs down, which will help hold back fare increases, which should, once again, attract ridership. There's a big dynamic going on. Metra is unlike a lot of providers within the country right now. We've seen 4 years of decline in ridership. So as we're investing in the system, we're trying to do everything we can to try to stave off actually the decline in ridership as well by not raising the fares. But unfortunately, we have raised the fares many a times. PTC just got installed. We're operating it now on 6 of Metra's 11 lines. And that was a priority for us. And putting PTC in front of more rehabs or purchases was a big decision that we had to make, our board had to make about 5 years ago. That was a $400 million unfunded mandate for us. But we're well on our way to a completion.
Thank you. You know, as it relates to PACE and what you're hearing about our capital needs, that's just to maintain the existing system. We're not even talking about growing the system. And the reality is, before we can ask anybody to give us more money to grow the system, we have to prove we're a worthy investment. And I believe PACE is doing that with Bus on Shoulders. You'll see it with Milwaukee Pulse. But the way we're funded is archaic and outdated, and we need to really talk to Springfield about how we get our operating funds. We're funded by sales tax. Anybody buy anything on the internet recently? Yeah. You don't pay sales tax to the RTA region when you buy on the internet. You may pay state sales tax. In South Dakota, there was a law that South Dakota something or another that allows states to collect it, but that hasn't trickled down yet to units of local government. So every time we buy online, we're actually taking money away from those units of government that are reliant on sales tax. The other thing is that our sales tax is structured on a manufacturing-based economy. We're a service-based economy. We don't even tax the items that are driving the economy. And I know these are hard conversations to say more taxes, but if we're going to really talk about, hey, how we're funded and how we're going to get funded, we really need to put it into perspective that the tax structure we're currently in is outdated. To the question earlier about PACE or about capital, what we've had to do, we've moved $100 million of operating money to capital from 2009 to 2015. Now, $100 million, when you hear $6 billion and $5 billion, may not sound like a lot. Our annual operating budget is $200 million. That means 50% of an operating budget 1 year has gone to capital. How many more buses? How much more service? How many more people with disabilities? How many students? How many workers could we have provided transportation with that $100 million if the state and federal government had a capital bill?
And can I just one, sorry, we're not going to let you get the questions back in. Just one sort of closing point on that, too. I think I get to see their regional budgets, their individual budgets. We roll them up into the regional transit budget for Northeastern Illinois. These guys have done an amazing job over the last few years of really sort of tightening their belts, literally looking under every rock and in every couch cushion to sort of cobble together the pennies that they need to keep the buses and trains running. But if you guys want us to run a 21st or a next century transportation system, we need to actually fund it and support it with a model that actually is sustainable to deliver that. You know, we need the tools to actually deliver that future and that vision, and they gave you some of those ideas here. The funding model that we have is not sustainable. It's not structured correctly. It has to change. Something has to give. That's a tough conversation that's going to have to occur in Springfield, but we're ready for it. We have not just ideas on how to actually restructure that. We've talked a little bit about some of that here, but also the projects that can be delivered and really making sure that nexus is connected between what people are being asked to, you know, if they're being asked to raise revenues for this, where are those dollars being spent? What are those specific projects? We have the plan. We have a strategic plan. We have some visionary ideas, and we really think we can deliver that.
Great. I'll get you all out of here in 3 more minutes, and we'll be really succinct. Leanne is telling you there, go to the RTA website and look at our Invest in Transit strategic plan. Has a number of projects that you'll see what the gold and glitter is out there and what the priorities would be. Leanne, really quickly, a question from Harvard Singh from Singh & Associates. Why is the RTA not able to sell bonds for a source of funding like the Illinois Tollway does?
Actually, the RTA can issue debt. However, touched on, we're capped out. We're only allowed to issue a certain amount of debt that the state has permitted us to do. And we've maximized all of that. Dorval sort of touched on that. We've done everything we can to sort of put as much money on the table for these guys to invest in their infrastructure. But we're tapped out. I can't do any more. Everything that we're a regional entity and we're sort of expected to sort of coordinate, lead, but any power we have comes directly from Springfield, and we've maximized every one of those opportunities, and that's why the conversation has to continue to occur in Springfield. How can we help ourselves to move forward, too?
Rocky Donahue, really quickly, any plans to expand the incredibly successful Bus on Shoulder program?
Absolutely. We long-range plans. We have plans to expand it through a lot of the network highways. The issue is we're talking about capital. We've reached capacity on I-55. We now have crowded buses, standing room buses, parking lots where they're issuing tickets in the communities. And it's so successful. But the issue is I can't buy any more buses. And even if I were able to buy buses, I don't have a garage to put the buses in because the facility we run that out of was built in 1956, I believe, 1960-ish. And it was designed to hold 50 buses, and we currently have like 62 in there now. And we can't get any more. So we need a capital bill in order to expand Bus on Shoulders. And as I mentioned, 3,000 people a day are getting on Bus on Shoulders in that I-55 corridor.
Great. Real quickly, I can answer this one. Clint Sabin from UGrid. What would your fare structure look like if you still had the Blagojevich Senior Free Ride Program? Clint, We give, among these agencies, about $100 million a year in free and reduced rides. So go to the do the math what our operating budget is. Think about fares being maybe a little less than half of the cost of ridership, but $100 million a year. But the real kicker is the state used to reimburse us for maybe half of that money, and it keeps getting whittled and whittled down, and basically we eat, or mostly importantly, the riders eat the cost of those $100 million of free and reduced ride mandates. Last but not least, John Zhang, a City Club member. I think you guys covered what Lyft and Uber and all of that does for the future of the Chicago mass transit system. But I want, Dorval, you tell your story about if everybody who worked in the Willis Tower took Uber or Lyft, how long would it take to unload those people?
Well, actually, it's not even Uber or Lyft. They just took an automated vehicle, because I know a lot of people talk about the fact that automated vehicles are the future of transportation. If everyone who worked in Willis Tower took an automated vehicle to get to work, it would take them 11 hours to arrive. So it just feeds the point that capacity is has to be a part of the conversation, and that's where public transportation comes into it. You will not get your way out of that issue through technology alone.
Thank you. And last but not least, to Linda Fisted, we're going to have another panel someday on this one. How can MetroPACE, the CTA, work together to transform the Metra electric line into a rapid transit system? That's a discussion for another day. Oh, yeah. Thank you, gentlemen and Leanne, very much.